One is lush and green, the other's a dry brown. One is known for its old-world charm, the other for its brash and outrageous excess. So on the surface, Nevada and Ireland don't have much in common. But think for a minute. Easy mortgage money sloshing around, a huge real estate bubble that bursts, banks fail under the weight of bad loans, unemployment soars, government spending is slashed, and then really, really angry citizens. It sure sounds like the recent history of Las Vegas, but it's also the story of the Republic of Ireland. So we decided to talk to some locals and some people who are watching the same problems in Ireland. Megan Green is an editor and economist with The Economist magazine's intelligence unit, and she covers Ireland, and she joins us from her office in London. Finn Keegan is a writer and independent journalist, and he joins us from his home in Westport, Ireland. And in the studio, John Restrepo, who's principal of the Restrepo Group, and columnist Scott Dickensheets from the Las Vegas Sun are also joining us. Welcome to you all. So, Megan Green, for those of us who haven't been watching the ins and outs of the European financial crisis, tell us, how did Ireland get to be such a center of this crisis?
Yeah, Ireland had a major property bubble that burst at the end of 2006, and it had a banking sector that wasn't properly regulated, so there was an absolute borrowing binge in Ireland, and now the banking sector has had massive write-downs, which the government has ended up funding. So as a result, the government's budget and deficit and debt figures have absolutely soared, and Ireland has had to ask for a bailout from the European Union and the IMF.
So the bailout from the government didn't work, and we've got a bailout from the European Union?
Yes, which in my opinion also won't work.
Okay, well, let's hold that, and we'll get to that in a second. So what would you add to that crisis, Finn?
Well, I suppose there's a political culture in Ireland that really doesn't lend itself to pursuing the best national interest. There is a political elite has formed here, and the politics are still mired in, you know, some civil war dynamics that run back decades. I think, to jump ahead a little bit, hopefully this crisis will give us a chance to enact badly needed political reform.
So when you say political elite, who are you talking about?
Well, I think the elite, funnily enough, is not centralized in particular, but it politics here really works on clientelism, that is, treating voters as clients and making sure that when their family needs a hospital bed that they're expressed up the queue, and also granting planning permissions. And the net effect of this is that the national interest, the bigger picture is never looked at, and deals are done. It's very much a deal-making culture. The blind eye is often turned to things that don't seem to directly affect, a particular individual. And so there isn't a long-term structured approach to how best to run an economy or a society.
So, John Restrepo, when you hear people talk about bubbles, real estate crashes, unregulated banks, and deal-making in politics, does it sound familiar in Nevada?
No. Of course it does. You could, other than the desert and the beautiful country and people of Ireland, it's the same situation. We're in this mess, and largely, I think in the United States and I think in Ireland as well, based on the previous comments, on a long period of cheap and easy credit. And we now know that it became sort of like a financial crack. You could not say no to it, whether it's personal credit or corporate credit or real estate credit, particularly here in the United States with the types of exotic mortgages and those kind of things that were promulgated. And now we're paying the price for this. And it was probably no place in the United States more prone to hyperbole and snake oil and happy talk than Las Vegas. And so we're now seeing the end results of this kind of what I call this gilded age of Las Vegas that we saw particularly between 1995 and 2005, where the only business cycle apparently that we're ever going to have, and only real estate cycle we're going to have, is a permanent upcycle. And now we know that we are not immune to the laws of economics and gravity in Southern Nevada. And so some of the things that I read about, and I read the Economist religiously, by the way, is really very telling what happened in Ireland, what happened here in Nevada.
So, Megan Green, snake oil, banks being unregulated, how did that come about in Ireland?
Yeah, well, it was part of this borrowing binge because when Ireland joined the EU, interest rates all of a sudden dropped very significantly, and banks just jumped right on this opportunity. So there was reckless lending, mainly by Anglo-Irish Bank, which is a property lender. But because Anglo-Irish Bank was lending so much and growing so much, the other banks had to sort of compete. And so they also overlent, and all these banks are way over-leveraged. I do think a key difference, though, between Ireland and Las Vegas is that Las Vegas is part of a fiscal union in the United States, whereas Ireland is not. And so the bailout for Ireland is as if Ireland is a consumer who has a credit card bill that he can't fully pay. So he takes out a second credit card with a higher interest rate to try to pay down all of his debt. And in Ireland's case, it won't be able to pay down its debt unless it can generate some sort of growth. And that looks really unlikely given the austerity measures the country will have to implement over the next couple of years.
But in some ways, that's a bit like Las Vegas, John. I mean, we've got contraction all over the economy with unemployment, creates more foreclosures. Are we in a spiral down as well?
Megan makes an interesting point. I just read a piece this morning in the New York Times from Paul Krugman, and he was showing the chart on interest rates. I think the bond rate in Ireland that's gone, it's continuing to go up. So the investment community, at least, doesn't believe that this process is going to work at this point. And we have the same situation here. There's a lot of quantitative easing, what the Fed just recently did, and all these sorts of things. But at the end of the day, the challenge that we have in the U.S. and particularly here in the high growth states in the Southwest, and Nevada being one of those, is an economy that's got incredible amount of slack demand by consumers. They're just not spending. They're under duress, and so doing this kind of stimulus like they're doing in Ireland, or the QE2 stuff they're doing here in the U.S. without any kind of since it doesn't affect directly jobs and incomes and wealth and the well-being of the average citizen, it has really limited value other than, debasing the currency in the case of QE2 or increasing rates, interest rates even higher in Ireland. So the challenge at the end of the day is the job market. And how do you create the jobs and get people feeling comfortable against spending and generating income and employment? And that's the challenge that we face. And that's what we're finding is going to be the hardest thing to accomplish in this particular recession.
So, but let's think back to the boom years here. Megan Green, was there something in Ireland, Las Vegas, as markets which led them to this kind of easy credit and investment flow?
Yeah, in Ireland, it was largely a result of joining the EU and having, or the euro area, and having interest drop so drastically all of a sudden. That was the main contributor to this lending boom. But again, regulation has been an issue in Ireland as well as the U.S. So I think in that sense, both examples share that.
Finn Keegan, we saw the effect of the boom here with people buying and flipping houses, new commercial properties sprouting up all the time. What was it like on the ground in Ireland during the boom years?
Well, there were cranes on the skyline at an extraordinary rate. I was at the time living in Las Vegas, as it happens. But shuttling between the two countries, you really could see an amazing construction boom in place and also skyrocketing property values. I mean, completely out of kilter with Ireland's geographical position on the edge of Europe. And the key thing was that Germany, which was, controls basically the European Central Bank, was keeping interest rates low through the decade. And what Ireland needed was a choke on demand. We needed interest rates to climb higher. Mm-hmm. But instead of that, we had this amazing gush of cheap money into an economy. As Megan said, we had inept regulators and crony capitalism. It was a toxic combination, and there was a frenzy that really only came to an end. We came to grief in 2008 when the bankers came to our government and said, if you don't bail us out instantly, we're all going to crash. And the government here was panicked into granting a blanket guarantee to all the debtors of our banks, including Anglo-Irish, this exceedingly toxic institution. The problem that people have identified is that a blanket guarantee was given rather than a more moderate underwriting of debts. And so Ireland, the Irish taxpayer, has been put on the hook to, with this bailout now that's been announced yesterday, to an extraordinary degree. You know, we're being saddled with debts. There has been no sharing of the pain with the countries that purport to be our partners in Europe. And people, as you said, there's rage on the streets. People are depressed and angry.
But why didn't people see this coming? Why was everybody so engulfed in the bubble without understanding that there might be a downside?
I think there were several economists that were speaking up and were notable for speaking up early on, and they were pilloried by the government. Our prime minister here personally attacked them for, you know, talking down the economy. There was, I think, economic naivety that was, you know, basically amateurish thinking. Also, I suppose the party seemed to be going so well. Ireland has had hundreds of years of difficulty, as your listeners will know. And there was a sense that we were finally ahead of the game. And confidence was very high. Certainly in the years up to about 2001, 2002, it seemed a genuinely founded growth in tapped potential that had hitherto not been tapped. Well, but Scott, then it turned into a sort of an interest rate-led frenzy.
Scott Dickensheets, does this sound like some of the boom years? I mean, we didn't have the bad history, I guess, in Nevada, or did we?
Well, it certainly sounds like the boom years here. I mean, for years, everything was, the attitude here was, you know, growth will cure what ails you. So, and anybody who sort of spoke up against the growth or real estate triumphalism that was, you know, the mantra for so long here was just ignored or not listened to. And it just caught up with us.
John Restrepo?
Well, yeah, I mean, what everyone has said so far, particularly Vin, is so true. I mean, if you didn't speak the gospel at that point, you would, at a minimum, considered some type of heretic, at the worst, some type of leper. And no one, and so all those folks in at the national level here in the U.S. and at the local level here in some of the high growth markets like Arizona, Southern California, Florida, as well, those economists that spoke and said, hey, you know, this is not good. Housing prices going up 30, 40, 50% sometimes a year is not particularly a good thing. We're very well welcome in polite circles. And that happened here locally and nationally. And so it's a kind of amazing how similar both situations are here in Southern Nevada and what we saw in Ireland, here in the U.S. and in Ireland. And you're right. I know in some, when I started bringing up some of the warning signs of a correction, a housing correction, there's no way I predicted this collapse. I was looked at like, you know, what are you saying? You're not a team player here. This is Southern Nevada. We're not subject to these kind of rules that you may see in other markets. And, you know, we became the victims of our own success in terms of the Vegas brand and starting to believe our own PR is basically what happened over time. No more so than when we thought we were going to Manhattanize Las Vegas, if you remember that. So it's kind of shocking and kind of also kind of very interesting to hear what happened in Ireland compared to us.
So you can identify with those economists who were being poo-pooed by the government when they said this can't last.
Oh yeah, we were I was treated sort of as persona non grata for a while in terms of speaking engagements and some contracts and clients and things like that because we were just not. I just was worried. It didn't make any sense to me. Did not make sense. No one, I think. What we didn't know was how cancer-ridden the whole financing structure was for homes, you know, the whole securitization markets or the RMBS and CMBS markets. We had no idea, but we knew this was not good. These kind of inflated prices so quickly made no sense. But, you know, we saw the bubble. We just didn't want to look at it.
So Finn Keegan, John Restrepo says that we in Las Vegas started to believe our own PR and believe our own brand. Did that happen to the Irish, too, with all this talk about the Celtic Tiger?
Yes, I think so, too. I think things got plainly so far out of hand. And I suppose, you know, you'd almost have to psychoanalyze the Irish character to get to the bottom of it. We very much wanted to be good Europeans. You know, there was recently a referendum to, you know, accentuate European, you know, Europeanization effectively, and European integration. Originally, the Irish people said, no, we don't want to go this extra step. But then we were almost frightened into reholding the referendum and saying, yes, we want to integrate further into Europe. Irish people, we're an island. We're quite geographically isolated, as I said. We were, you know, part of the UK for over 100 years. And I think we found it very difficult. We pursued an isolationist path economically for the middle of the 20th century, and it really got us nowhere. Our agricultural base has really declined, such that only 5% of our exports are now agricultural. So we're really looking to larger political structures for security, and the European Union seemed to offer that. Now, part of the European project is solidarity, but we, I think, feel that we are not feeling much solidarity from our European partners at the moment. In fact, we're being punished, as you say, as though we are credit card holders, that, you know, the penalties are falling, the burden of penalty is falling onto us and not onto the lenders. Now, the big lenders here are the German banks and institutions and British institutions, and there is a crisis in the euro. It remains to be seen if the euro as a currency will survive this crisis. Ireland turned out to be a weak link in the euro chain, and this problem is devolving more to the center of Europe at this point. Megan may be able to speak better to this than I am.
But sure, I want to talk about that in a little while, but I'm just thinking when I hear Finn talk about the way in which Ireland always felt like outsiders, it reminds me of the way Nevada you know, used to have nefarious ways of financing our economy up through the 70s. And then sometime in the 80s, we became respectable and the whole country wanted to finance the Nevada economy. So do you see that parallel there, John?
To a certain extent, yeah. There's no doubt, I think, with the financing, with the junk bond financing of the Mirage in the late 80s, that kind of changed the tenure of Las Vegas in terms of how commercial large-scale commercial projects and development was financed. We became respectable, so to speak. And then over time, as gaming spread around the country as a kind of a panacea to a certain extent of state budgetary problems around the country, the Las Vegas became more mainstream. And we were very good at selling ourselves and branding ourselves. So everyone wanted a piece of Vegas. And so, yeah, it sort of contributed to that process as well.
Well, I think there's definitely been a subset of people who lament the fact that we've lost our you know, our lifestyle edge. You know, we used to be the place where you could go to do things you couldn't do anywhere else. And we've totally backed off on that now. We've had multiple opportunities to sort of play up that role, you know, with some of the businesses we might or might not allow. And we've become much more conservative. And there are people here who very much lament that. There have been numerous stories on how we've sort of lost our edge and the economic benefits that would go with it.
And this morning we're looking at the similarities and a few differences between the economic crises in Ireland and in Las Vegas. Of course, over the weekend, the European community bailed out the Irish government, which had bailed out the Irish banks. But there's big similarities in the commercial property boom, the housing boom, and of course the foreclosure crisis in both countries. Megan Green, both Nevada and Ireland have made themselves something of corporate havens. Nevada has no company tax. Ireland has a very low tax rate, and that's annoyed some of the bigger European countries. Tell us how Ireland positioned itself as a home base for corporate interests.
Yeah, that's right. Ireland has a corporate tax rate that is only 12.5%, which is much lower than the EU average of 22.7%. And as a result, a number of U.S. and other companies have set up their European headquarters in Ireland and in Dublin. And so Ireland's export base has been significantly strengthened by that. It's been a big shock to me, at least, that Ireland's been able to maintain its low corporate tax rate. But part of the bailout deal was that Ireland could maintain it despite pressure from other European countries, which would love to see Ireland having to raise its corporate tax rate so that they could compete with Ireland for multinational companies' foreign direct investment.
What impact would it have if they were forced to raise that corporate tax rate?
Well, as I pointed out, Ireland's corporate tax rate is significantly below the EU average. And so really the country could afford to raise it a couple percentage points, and companies would not head for the hills because it would still be way below the average. That being said, investors and companies could be worried that it was just the first in a series of corporate tax rises. And so that could cause concern for companies thinking about relocating to Ireland.
Did those low corporate taxes bring, and I'm sort of putting this in quotation marks, real businesses, or was it simply just a financial clearinghouse for the rest of Europe?
It's both, actually. There's a really large and vibrant technology and pharmaceutical sector in Ireland now, largely as a result of this corporate tax rate. But as you mentioned, there are a number of sort of shells coming in part from Germany, but other European countries, which are using Ireland's corporate tax rate as sort of a front.
John, I mean, we've obviously said that in Nevada we have low tax rates, that we are trying to attract business. Has it worked to some extent here too or not?
Well, it's attracted companies that are focused in their to having low tax rates, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's brought companies in here that depend on a high intellectual capital quotient or highly educated population. I'm not sure. If I don't mind me asking a question, Megan, what's the unemployment rate in Ireland right now? I guess Finn as well.
It's around 13.7% right now.
13%. We're at 14.1% here, so very similar in that regard. I think what Ireland has going for compared to Nevada, as an example, is we have a very discretionary spending-based economy. We have two economic drivers. Here is mining, which is a different type of animal, and in the resort industry, the diversification, what appears to be the diversification of the Irish economy, it's helped establish a better base from which to return to some sense of normalcy or health over time. And that's our challenge here, in my opinion, in Southern Nevada, is that we have not done as well as we could have because of the boom and all these sorts of things to really diversify the economy into higher paid jobs or jobs that are develop our human capital, intellectual capital. That's the concern I have long term for us.
Why is it a concern? I mean, do we not have the political will to try and do that?
It takes a long time. And, you know, Americans and particularly apparently people in Nevada like quick answers. And to diversify the economy, to have a bioscience cluster and some of these other things you hear from other parts of the country requires huge investments in education and a lot of political will and maybe a different tax structure than we have today. And so that's something we haven't had to deal with because we didn't really have to fix anything because the growth of the resort industry for many years kind of took us out through these recessions. I don't think that's going to be the case this time. That's the discussions we're having now among private and public policymakers is how do we now reinvent ourselves and what does it mean to reinvent ourselves and how do we structure our economic base and our education base and our tax structure to reinvent ourselves if, in fact, we need to reinvent ourselves. I mean, there's, I guess, an argument to be made as the Southern Nevada economic model is not broken. It's just tarnished a little bit because of the economy, the business cycle. And there's others that say, you know, this shows that we were too concentrated in an industry that depended on discretionary spending of consumers who may not come back to those freewheeling spending days anytime soon.
Do you think that there's some kind of talk now about raising our business taxes to try and close that budget gap?
There is, you know, I don't know. There is some talk about changing the tax structure. That means increasing business taxes or just shifting the taxes, how the taxes are collected, what types of taxes are collected. That's the argument today. And there's a fine line between proper taxation and changing behavior of businesses. The main thing we know is uncertainty, and I think Megan was absolutely correct. There's probably room to increase the Irish tax from 13 or whatever it is to 15, let's say. But when you increase that level of uncertainty, companies may be frightened off from moving to Ireland. The same thing here. If you start moving around the tax structure a little bit too much, it brings uncertainty. The bigger problem we have today is while the tax structure is too narrowly based, the bigger problem is the economy is too narrowly based. Even if you broaden the tax structure here, however you define it, on a narrowly based economy, it's not particularly a solid foundation. You have to broaden the economic base, and that's what we don't have here at this point.
Finn Keegan, how about that? If you think about that, we've talked for a long time about, and you said decades, the way Ireland was relatively narrowly based on agriculture. Was the reinvention of Ireland too quick?
Well, one solid and things like thing that one of the things that gives me hope for the future is that a lot of resources were put into education in Ireland from the 50s and 60s on. So the result of that was that you had a highly educated workforce. So it wasn't only the corporate tax rate. Corporate tax rate was certainly a lure for the 600 US firms that came to Ireland. But once that was in the picture, there was also the discovery that there was a very educated workforce with, at the time, labor costs were quite low as well in the 90s. So I would certainly stress that as something that Nevada maybe should be looking into, funding the education system sufficiently to produce an educated and attractive workforce to diversify out of mining and casinos. Speaking of diversification, we made the mistake of sort of grounding our exchequer tax intake on transactional property transactions, so that when the real estate bubble collapsed and there were no longer any transactions, we developed a huge structural deficit in our budget, which has really added to the uncertainty greatly. So certainly diversification of activity, but also of tax inputs as well, is very important, I would say.
Scott Dickensheets, what about that education? Can we re-educate the Nevada workforce?
Well, that depends. I mean, right now we have a governor whose plan to meet the possibly 50%, state budget shortfall is to do nothing about the taxes, the tax structure. So, and there are plenty of legislative leaders who, by the way, do think that has to happen. But there's, our legislature has a history of gridlock and so on. So while I agree that that's, sort of a keystone necessity to improve the educational infrastructure here, my hope for it is somewhat moderated.
You're a pessimist?
I'm a pessimist. But I've lived here for 40 years, so I've earned my pessimism.
The number's 258-3552. That's 258-3552. And we're joined now by Teg in Las Vegas. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. First of all, I want to say hello to Finn Keegan, and he is absolutely right. We have really hurt our state by, being, a great place for business. But you know what? We're not going to get any new businesses because of our education base. Our education is so bad. You know, when I lived up in Seattle, Washington, I used to sell real estate, and I worked for a national company, so I got a lot of relocations. The first question was not about what our tax structure was. The first question was, tell me about your education system. And luckily, at that time, we had a great education system. But if I were selling real estate here today, I'd have to say, we thank God every day for Mississippi. We have to get ourselves fixed, and we're not going to get it fixed if we just think, that we're going to attract more business by keeping low taxes. We're not. And if we increase the taxes on the ones that are here, they're not going to leave. So, we've got to stop playing, to the people that say, well, we've got to keep those taxes low because we got to keep business in town. That's bunk.
Okay, how about that, Scott Dickensheets?
Well, I think she's absolutely right. I think we have a cart and horse situation here because you can't improve education without some kind of investment in it, but you need some kind of money coming in order to invest. And right now I think we're just, I think we're locked in a situation where that's not going to happen.
Is there an opportunity here to improve that situation?
Well, I mean, I think there's always an opportunity if this economic diversification idea ever catches hold. But we've had two decades now of gaming and construction are going to cover all our bases, and there's been a lot of lip service to diversification, but I'd be interested in somebody showing me a list of successful diversification efforts, because I bet it's not a very long list.
So, Scott, did we miss that opportunity? Should we have been doing it in the good years, the fat years?
Well, it's human nature. If you're in high clover, you're not going to worry about the bad years. You're going to roll with it, and that's just human nature. And that's what we did. I don't think there was a lot of investment. I think there were good years where we should have you know, that some visionaries could have had some sway, perhaps, to push us in that direction. But, you know, we were just rolling with the high money.
So, Megan Green, is it the same story in Ireland, that they just rolled with the high money?
Yeah, that is the case. But I would say that in terms of education, you know, Ireland has a very highly educated workforce. And the concern there for everyone is that now everyone will have to emigrate because there aren't any jobs. And this is a big deal in Ireland because in the 80s, unemployment was above 16%. All the parents had to kiss their children goodbye as they went to mainland Europe and found work. And so it's a really touchy subject and will be the source of a lot of social unrest, I think.
That's an issue that's, I mean, also come up here in southern Nevada. I mean, for the first time in anybody's memory, we may have people moving back to California or moving back east.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely something of an exodus underway. You don't want to make too much of it, but it is very much happening. There's more U-Hauls leaving than there are coming in. So, but I do want to say that I was in Ireland last year for St. Patrick's Day, and you can see the education level on every corner where there's a bookstore. You can't swing a cat without hitting a bookstore there, which was great for me because that's my kind of environment. But that's just one indicator of what they have there that that's an investment we haven't made here in the education.
So, Finn Keegan, I mean, is that striking a real chord in the Irish psyche, this threat of people migrating to America, to Australia, to other parts of the world again?
Yes, unfortunately, that was always a problem here, particularly in the 80s, as Megan said. A lot of our educated workforce would leave. And the fear is, because of the austerity budgets that have come in, there doesn't seem much of a plan or a way forward for growth in the economy. And the fear is that you could have, as the picture is developing, hundreds of graduates leaving every week. And that's not very good for enterprise or innovation in the economy. So there is, unfortunately, the flip side to this is that often emigration is a solution. It's seen as a solution here in a perverse way, that it's part of the cultural solution to our problems is that people leave. And it's an unhealthy dynamic, really. It would be better if we could stay here. We could reform our political and civic structures the way we need to. I was thinking about this before this call, that the way politics works here, it's almost as though the Speaker of the House of Representatives is in the White House and there is no balance between an executive branch and the legislative branch, so that it's all about bringing home the pork to your district, unfortunately. And that badly needs to be reformed. People feel unrepresented and feel, for instance, in these most recent negotiations with the IMF and the EU for a bailout, that our national interest wasn't really brought into play, that it was more about saving the euro and sacrificing Ireland in the process.
Could it launch a kind of Tea Party movement in Ireland?
I was thinking that too. We could certainly use some of the Tea Party spirit, some of the zeal for change. It's hard to say. Irish people, I think, are very good at resilience. We've lived through some very hard times, far harder times than these. And, the flip side of that is that you might just weather a storm rather than, going forth and fighting the political battles we need to fight. It remains to be seen. There was a very big march in Dublin at the weekend, which was very encouraging. But how, the mechanics of converting that into political reform, a lot hangs on the incoming administration. Will they, because we have no monetary powers, that's in the hands of Europe. We have no fiscal powers anymore because that's been directed by the IMF and the EU. So really, I'm hoping that the incoming administration will devote its energies to a reform agenda.
Well, Finn, you mentioned earlier that you had been living in the United States and in Las Vegas until recently. Does it feel right now like you might have made a mistake in moving back to Ireland?
It certainly crossed my mind. I suppose when we mentioned the unemployment figures here are high, but they're just that shade higher in Nevada. So, my wife actually was working in real estate as a property appraiser, so our way of life in Nevada would have been threatened anyway. So we would have had to reinvent ourselves to some extent to survive the recession there. So it's one of those things you take, you know, fork in the road. We have three children and they're having the most wonderful childhood here. The quality of life in Ireland remains very attractive, I think, for all the financial and economic problems. And it is a very special thing, a West of Ireland childhood. It's very rural around here. It's, you know, not very materialistic. And the children are out playing in the snow today. So it's not all about the balance sheet, luckily.
But don't you worry that maybe you'd have to farewell them in 10, 15 years?
Yes, that's very possible. There is kind of a family tradition of bouncing to and fro between the U.S. and Ireland, certainly on my wife's side. So maybe they'll follow in that family tradition. Luckily, the world is getting smaller and smaller. In the old days, when in the 19th century, when people went to the North America or to Australia, they may as well have been going to Mars. But I suppose in a globalized economy, we have to maybe get used to bouncing around more than we'd like to.
But that's a sunny Mars that they were going to, wasn't it?
Yeah.
John Restrepo, yeah. While we're talking about migration, I mean, is Las Vegas, Southern Nevada, in danger of losing some of its best and its brightest? I mean, new college graduates losing some of the professionals that moved here in the last 10 or 15 years?
You know, it's a great question because, you know, I have two kids. My kids are in their 20s who are raised here. They were not born here, but they were raised in Las Vegas and went to school here. And they're both gone. My son's in Indiana. My daughter's in New York. And most of the friends that they had that they went to college with or graduated from high school with are pretty much gone at this point, have moved on to greener pastures in other states. And we've had a brain drain problem here in Southern Nevada for many, many years. And it was not driven necessarily by the recession. It was driven by, again, the very concentrated and narrow-based economic structure we had here that did not provide the kind of jobs we needed to keep those folks employed. So they moved to a lot of other places, particularly California. So the brain drain has been a problem. It's been accelerated now with the recession, but it's been with us for a while.
Scott Dickensheets?
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a dearth of jobs for, you know, knowledge workers, if you want to call them that. I remember you might recall there was that ambitious Midtown project that Carol Harder and some developers wanted to build around UNLV, the idea being to attract this sort of creative class. But I think the creative class is sort of rootless here. Although there is, you know, I've gotten some email from in the wake of writing about some of these real estate issues, from people who are, you know, professors and people in that sort of knowledge industry, who are basically pinned down here now under their mortgage. They, you know, I've heard some people they've had to turn down, you know, great jobs in other places because they just can't get out from under their house without totally ruining their credit. So some of the brain drain is stemmed by the fact that they can't leave however much they might want to.
The number's 258-3552. That's 258-3552. Bill in Las Vegas, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's the issue that really strikes you about this?
I've been listening to the talk here this morning, and it seems that they're arguing both sides of the issue, that Ireland is well-educated, bookstores everywhere, and they can't find jobs. They're all leaving. Las Vegas, you're saying, well, because we don't have a high educational base, we can't attract industry, so people are leaving. You're arguing both sides, and I'm not sure that's entirely logical. I'd like to hear what you think of that.
So how about that, John? I mean, we arguing both sides of that issue?
Yeah, to a certain extent, there is a certain a bit of paradox. I think the point I was trying to make is it's the diversification of the Irish economy compared to the Southern Nevada economy is such that while they may be experiencing brain drain right now because of an economic cycle, over time it seems to me it's better positioned to come back stronger and quicker possibly as the economic cycle goes through it because of their more diversified economy. Our brain drain here has been caused primarily because initially by a very concentrated economy. Now, made worse by the recession. Although, as Scott was saying earlier, some folks can't leave even if they want to leave. So we're in a kind of a weird situation where we're not attracting the kind of jobs we'd like to have here because we're in kind of a recession. We don't have the educated workforce. So it's kind of a circular discussion. But I think at the end of the day, as it relates to Southern Nevada, it has to do more with the fact that we have not really been serious about diversifying and developing our economy like we would have. Now, would have an economic, a more diversified economy would have avoided this recession? No. But if you look at Phoenix as an example, Phoenix has got worse real estate problems than we do, but has an unemployment rate that's 4 or 5 points lower than ours, primarily because of more diversified economy and more investment in the higher ed system that they have in Arizona than we have here. So it works. It does cut both ways, but I think it's slightly different arguments on both sides.
So you'd rather buy long Irish bonds than Nevada bonds right now?
I think so. If they get their act together, I'm just not a big fan of this kind of bailout without working at the consumer level and helping improve the job market. None of these activities that Ireland is doing necessarily is helping the job market. It's helping bail out banks and socializing risk, I guess. But I have my concerns on it. But I think over the long term, based on what I see in Ireland compared to Southern Nevada, they have a better foundation for future economic sustainability.
We're talking about the economic crises in Southern Nevada and Ireland. What's the same? What's a little bit different? And Scott Dickensheets, there are basically two narratives here in Nevada. Either the banks are the bad guys and fed the frenzy, or consumers were grossly irresponsible and spent much more than they had. Who do you think really deserves the blame for the crisis here in Southern Nevada?
Well, as a consumer, I'm perfectly willing to blame the banks. I will say that, when I bought my house in 2006 with typical Dickensheetsian timing right at the top of the market to make sure I paid the most for the least value, there was only so much research I could do to find out what I was getting into. I didn't get a subprime mortgage, so how was I going to, research what impact a subprime mortgage, whatever, might have on my finances? So I think, I would, there's probably some blame on both sides. Plenty of people, got into situations they should have known better than to get into. But I also think that there's a lot of high level manipulation by banks and so on, who, there's a certain shamelessness on Wall Street that I think is partly at fault here. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around, believe me. But I still tend to lean more towards the institutions and so on.
So, Finn Keegan, from what you've been saying this morning about Ireland, there's some of that same sense that it's the European community, the European Central Bank, that really is responsible here.
Yes, certainly they're a major context to the problems we had inside the country. We had almost in Anglo-Irish Bank, that major property lender that Megan mentioned earlier, in that case, we almost had a rogue institution that was almost in a pyramid scheme situation. Really terrible things were happening, and nobody was watching or cared to watch what was happening. I think property itself, people were getting 100% mortgages, and the banks were encouraging them to take out a car loan at the same time. And so it did. There was, at the domestic household level, people were buying into this dream of the Celtic Tiger and getting onto the property ladder with zero down, and the monthly cash flow figures looked good, but the assumptions were being passed over quietly. There was an awful lot of property developers that really went crazy, that a large tranche of the loans involved have turned into debts. Come from that sector.
So Megan,
it's a
Green,
perfect storm in a way, to use the cliche.
So Megan Green, is the European community or the Irish government responding to that perfect storm with some kind of consumer reform package for financial industry?
Yeah, there will be a very strict conditionality attached to this lending facility that was announced yesterday for Ireland. We don't know all of the details of that conditionality, but I presume that certainly regulation will come into it, and structural reform as well.
So, John Restrepo, I mean, we often talk about how we have a lack of regulation here. Is that part of the problem as well as part of the benefit of living in Nevada?
Well, you know, I don't know if it was as much regulation as paying risk forward. You know, the old days, you bought your home to the local bank or the savings and loan, held a mortgage, and they made sure that you had qualified borrowers and all those sorts of things. You know, sort of like they still do in Canada, you know, kind of boring banking, but which helped Canada get through this. We once we started going through the process of securitizing mortgage instruments, you know, the mortgages and carving and slicing and dicing and selling these pieces all over the world, I think caused a lot of the problems. It was a bit of regulation issue, but also just the free markets at work, but in a kind of very perverse sort of way. And so over time, I think that is proven to be a major problem. You also had assumptions built in the rating agencies, for example, in New York, that housing prices were going to go up forever at 5 to 6% a year. And so when you had that kind of model, you know, growth would kind of take you out of any kind of bad mistakes you made. But you know, there's always to just wax philosophical for a minute. There is no shortage of hubris and self-delusion among human beings. And so we all wanted to believe, both at the personal level, at the corporate level, at the company level, at, you know, whatever level you want to look at, that this economic cycle that we were in, both at the global level, just not here, was going to last essentially forever, or for at least in our lifetimes. And so when you have that kind of mindset, growth will take care of everything. Doesn't really make a difference what kind of decision you make. Your decision will be mitigated and helped by this permanent growth model. And so we're finding that out, that that's not the case now. And it's been a very difficult learning experience. You think about it real quickly. 80% of the population in the U.S., I assume it's maybe applies to Europe as well, was born after World War II, the new population living today. This is essentially our Great Depression for a lot of folks. This is, you know, very few people are left that went through the Great Depression. So hopefully it teaches us what it means to live within our means and not take too much debt and have a more balanced and sustainable economy.
Are there any solutions, or do we just have to grow out of it slowly?
You almost have to grow out of it slowly. I mean, the problems are so deep. I mean, in the perfect world, the way you would bail out or fix the housing market is you write down all the mortgages down to the current value of the home. That's an $8 to $10 trillion problem. That will not happen. There's not a political will or financial will to do something like that. So at this point, it's just a matter of the patient, i.e., the economy, has got to heal itself. You know, we're not dying anymore. You know, the indicators are starting to stabilize, at least in the U.S. and here in Southern Nevada. But, you know, stabilized indicators, I mean growing indicators. And so it's just going to take a lot of time and patience, essentially, and to get through this. And we're going to have a tough time for the next 4 or 5 years, both at the national and local level, until we get unemployment at some level that's a sustainable level of unemployment, and that we have people spending and feeling secure in their jobs. The problem is the consumer is still under very severe duress, and a lot of this financial engineering that's being done, you know, here by the Fed or in Europe is really helping the consumer.
Megan Green, you said at the beginning of the program that you were skeptical that these solutions would work. I've only got about 30 seconds, but tell us, why isn't it going to work?
Yeah, well, I think what was just said is exactly right. The only way to really solve this, it's the problem is that Europe has too much debt, so you have to write down some of it. And since they won't be writing down senior bank bonds, it looks like sovereign debt is going to be what's going to have to be written down in, you know, Greece and in Ireland and potentially Portugal next.
Well, on that pessimistic note of suffering and pain, we've been talking about the economy in both Ireland and in Southern Nevada. John Restrepo of the Restrepo Consulting Group and Scott Dickensheets, columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, here in the studio. And on the phone from his house in Westport, Ireland, Finn Keegan, a writer and independent journalist. And Megan Green, she joined us from her office in London. She's an editor and economist with The Economist magazine's Intelligence Unit. Thank you all.